First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Corrine Brown, now out of prison, is running for office again, this time in Orlando. The Jacksonville City Council votes to keep Confederate monuments up, at least for now. Plus, why you may be paying more for trash pickup. Just some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the biggest stories of the week with our roundtable. Already getting your calls. Join us. 549-2937. Then later, our arts and culture editor, Matt Shaw, takes us inside JME, the Jacksonville Music Experience. A fun little Friday listening session to some amazing local artists. But first, it's Friday, and my gosh, I say this every week. But what a news week this has been. So we're pleased to welcome attorney and former Jacksonville City Council President Jack Webb. Hey, Jack.
Melissa, how are you this morning?
It's great to have you on the show. Also with
Thanks
us today,
for having me, Jack.
Sure thing, the Daily Dot's Claire Goforth. Hey, Claire.
Good morning.
Good morning. Here in studio, David Bauerlein of the Florida Times Union. Always great to have you, David.
Good morning, everybody.
And rounding out our fabulous foursome, WJCT News' own Jamie Jackson. Hey, Jamie. We'll have Jamie in a minute. Hey, Jamie, are you with us?
I am. Good morning.
Good to have you. Lots to talk about, folks. We'll go to your calls in a moment. The number to join the show, 549-2937. You can also stream us. We are up live now on Facebook and YouTube. Watch along. Drop us an email at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Facebook is open, or tweet me at Melissa Injax. Let's begin with our top story. She was once imprisoned and disgraced, but now former U.S. Representative Corrine Brown has decided to try to get back to her old haunt. Yes, Congress. Brown has declared to run for another seat than the one she held here in North Florida. She's going to try to run in Central Florida. The former 12-term Congresswoman filed paperwork Thursday in Tallahassee to enter the fall elections. A new website, votecorrine.com, was created Wednesday to raise campaign donations. Now, this is the seat that U.S. Representative Val Demings is leaving down in the Orlando area because she is trying to unseat Senator Marco Rubio. We begin the hour with a closer look at this story. Can Corrine Brown deliver once again? Let us know your thoughts. It's 549-2937. 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInjax. Facebook always open. Let's begin with the one person on our panel who has himself held office, Jack Webb. You know, Corrine Brown actually, Jack, fought against the creation of that congressional district in Central Florida. Now she's running for that seat. What are your thoughts?
Well, once in prison and disgraced, now she's decided to get back in the race. I'm not surprised at all. You know, her opposition to that congressional district obviously was politically motivated some years ago, and her decision to jump back into the game is likewise politically motivated, so it should come as no surprise. This reminds me of Alcee Hastings, who was appointed by Jimmy Carter to the federal bench. He was impeached by the U.S. House of Representatives and then ran for the House himself and served in the House for a number of years until his death last year. So apparently Corrine is channeling her inner Alcee Hastings, and it'll be interesting. You know, if you're a supporter of Corrine Brown, you're saying go for it, Corrine. If you're a detractor, well, you know, at least the location under the byline will now be Orlando rather than Jacksonville.
That's right. You know, Claire Goforth, Corrine Brown will be running as a convicted felon, but according to the Constitution, that's allowed.
Yes, it certainly is. And I think that she'll find good company in Congress where there are plenty of criminals. But, you know, Corrine Brown,
my goodness.
She has the name recognition, she has the experience, and she has the benefit in this cycle of being able to run as an underdog with unique experience of the criminal justice system. She'll be able to use that to her advantage in what is a very short campaign, but to argue for criminal justice reform, which she is already starting to use to her advantage. She is a seasoned political operative. You know, she ruled Jacksonville Democratic politics with an iron hand for quite a while. I think a lot of local Democrats may have breathed a little bit of a sigh of relief to see her go to Orlando. And while she may have, you know, she's got some political baggage, that doesn't mean that she can't win this primary. If I'm an Orlando Democrat among the, I believe it's almost 10 who have filed to run, hearing her name in the mix is going to make me very nervous.
Okay, so David Bauerlein, to recap, Brown pleaded guilty last month to a single federal charge of trying to obstruct the administration of internal revenue laws, essentially lying on her tax returns. She was convicted of 18 counts surrounding a sham charity. She was imprisoned for 5 years. The conviction was overturned on appeal. She served roughly half of that. She has a lot of sympathy in this community among some supporters who felt that she was unfairly singled out for prosecution. There are certainly other voters who feel that she's got a lot of cheek to run for office after what's happened. Can she build the kind of name recognition in Orlando she'll need? Let's remember, when she held office before, her district did snake down to that part of the state. It was a very gerrymandered district. It had a very odd shape. What about that?
It's possible. I mean, she does have, she's not been in office for 6 years. That's a long time in politics. Now, she was very active in that area. She steered a lot of federal money for transportation projects to that area. It was part of her political base. So she does have that going for her. And if she can make people remember for that rather than the fact that she was in prison and convicted. I think the last I looked, there were 10 Democrats who have either filed as active or have already qualified. So it could be a really, really big field of Democratic candidates in that primary. And you don't need 50% plus one to win the primary. You just need a plurality. Mm-hmm. So to the extent the field gets divided up and enough people say, you know what, let's bring back Corrine for sort of one more farewell tour, which is kind of what it feels like. It's almost like those oldies bands coming back with their greatest hits. Then she could possibly do it. It takes a lot of energy. And whether she at this point in her life has the energy to run that type of a campaign, I'm not completely sure.
Jamie Jackson, WJCT News. You know, Corrine Brown, a huge name in local politics, getting back into the mix at the same time as the governor has aggressively moved to effectively neuter African-American representation in the Congress in our part of the state, and that is being litigated.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I actually remember her when I was working on the Hill as a communications director. She was such a presence, and even Washington was very popular among the other legislators. It's very interesting to see how this will all play out, because if you remember when all of that stuff was going down, she received still a lot of support from the Black community. And I think being able to play on criminal justice reform, being able to kind of say, hey, do you remember when I served you? Think about all the things that I did for our community. Think about all of the legislation and everything that I have done and how long I was in office. She was in office a very, very, very long time. And that's not something I don't think people in the Black community specifically will forget. And so I think when you tie in everything that's going on with the maps and kind of how Florida is being recarved, it's certainly, I think, going to play into her favor.
Let's go to your calls now. If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable, where we talk about the top stories of the week across the region. We're live on the radio and live on video. Watch the show on Facebook and YouTube. What do you think about Corrine Brown announcing she's going to run again for Congress? 549-2937. Mark on the West Side. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. This is just driving me crazy. Corrine Brown went to jail for certain few things she did illegally, but she has a history. If you go back, you know, there's rumors and whispers that she was you know, defrauding people, mostly black people, going back to when she was a travel agent. So, you know, this is not, you know, oops, we made a mistake in prosecuting her. But I just, God love politicians. How can she has absolutely no shame. And I'm kind of wondering if this might be a cynical effort. I think that the part of her conviction was a pretty hefty fine. That may have been overturned. I don't know. So could this be some sort of cynical way to earn some money back so she can pay these fines, knowing that she couldn't I'm hoping she couldn't possibly be elected. But do you think it's her way of maybe paying back all these debts she's incurred?
No way to know that, Mark. Thank you for your thoughts. Lots of Facebook commentary. Here's a comment from Rich. Brown is a disgrace and an affront to decency everywhere. Martin writes, she simply has no shame. She should have been retried by the feds. Now, all of that said, Jack Webb, there are plenty of other constituents out there who regard Corrine Brown warmly and would like to see her get back to Congress. They see her as a canny political operator who brought a lot of money and resources to Florida.
Melissa, you're absolutely right, and the comments that you're seeing are you know, prove the correctness of my prior comment. That is, there are people who hate her and there are people who love her. There's no disputing, though, that she was very, very effective. And as one of the panelists just said before, she was very popular in the halls of Congress. And quite honestly, she was very popular with a lot of Republicans in this community as well, because Corrine did make things happen. She was a go-to person. She was very theatrical, and at times, perhaps people found her embarrassing, but she got it done, and she will be formidable. In fact, I'm hearing the panelists speak of her, and notwithstanding, you know, the comments coming, you know, via email or whatever, text, I think she's a very formidable candidate. You got 10 people in the race. It is a plurality, and, you know, it's essentially a rigged district, and it's a gerrymandered district. If she gets through the primary, it looks like she'll go to Congress. It'll be really interesting political theater in light of the presidential election if Governor Ron DeSantis is, in fact, seeking that nomination. You have Corrine in Congress, you have Ron DeSantis trying to run for president. That'd be really, really something to talk about.
It's never boring when you cover politics in Florida. That's all I can say. The number to join us, 549-2937. Now, speaking of people running for office, we need to touch on this. We learned this morning that Republican Matt Nemeth has dropped out of the race for Duval County Sheriff. That clears the path for the only other Republican in the race, T.K. Waters, to consolidate Republican support. Several Democrats are also running, and they're going to have to do it on a compressed schedule because, as most folks know, Duval County Sheriff Mike Williams was forced to resign under fire when it came to light that he had been living outside of Duval County for over a year. Williams moved away to Nassau County. The sheriff of Duval has a residency requirement. By the way, a Jax Today investigation here at our own WJCT News finds that more than 30% of officers in the JSO live outside of Duval County. Most sergeants, in fact, live in St. John's County or outside the county line. They're allowed to do that under statute, although a poll back in 2015 found that the majority of Jacksonville voters think that police should be required to live in the county they serve. Now, as we talk about this, we want your calls about the sheriff's race. 549-2937. David Bauerlein, Matt Nemeth dropping out clears the field for the governor's preferred candidate in this race, Republican T.K. Waters. There's already been some chatter that perhaps Nemeth will receive a prominent new job as reward for clearing the field for Waters. There are a number of Democratic candidates running for sheriff, like Ken Jefferson, who's known on local TV for being a Channel 4 public safety analyst. and in other local stations. Lakeisha Burton, a prominent and popular local Democrat. Tony Cummings. Those are some of the names on the Democratic side. What do you make of this?
Well, I give an outside chance that T.K. Waters could win outright in August, which is the first election. It's a jungle primary. That means everybody's on the ballot, Republican, Democrat. That means everybody in the county can vote in that sheriff race, regardless of party affiliation or no party affiliation. I think up until now, there was a real expectation there would be a runoff in November. I would think that's still going to be the case. It seems hard to see that anybody can get 50% plus one, but it does give T.K. Waters an opportunity to go for a knockout punch in October while Democrats are more splitting up the voters. No party affiliation is going to be a huge swing vote. Who are they going to go for? Are they going to incline to go with the Democrat and keep T.K. Waters from getting that 50% plus one in August?
Claire Goforth, what about that? One thing we've noticed as we've covered this race is that Lakeisha Burton has managed to garner some bipartisan support and money from traditionally Republican donors. Can she make it a race against Waters? Can Ken Jefferson, who perhaps has the most name recognition due to all of his work on TV, can he make it a race? Or is Waters the heavy favorite?
You know, that's difficult to tell, and I must disclose that Lakeisha and I have run in the same leadership Jacksonville class of 2019, the best class.
It's class of 2013.
Well, we'll have to duke that out after,
okay,
after
that's
the
fine.
Show. You know, having two Democrats that have a lot of support and name recognition, a little bit favored there with Ken Jefferson, obviously, that is going to certainly impact what we see in August. I mean, we're typically seeing very low turnout in those votes in the off cycle sort of months when people aren't really paying a lot of attention. It's going to be a struggle for all of the candidates to really get themselves out there in front of the electorate to get people to go to the ballot. And historically in Jacksonville, we have a much stronger chance of a good Republican turnout in August. So that does give T.K. Waters an advantage. I think that both of the Democrats right now are going to be hitting the road very hard on the campaign trail, trying to galvanize support and to differentiate themselves as to what they will bring to JSO should they be elected sheriff.
So far, only two of the five candidates for sheriff, according to our partner News for Jax, have officially qualified to run, and that includes Waters. Candidates have until noon today to file paperwork if they want to run for office in Florida. Lakeisha Burton and Wayne Clark, according to this report, are the only qualified candidates who've met that deadline so far. 549-2937. We're still getting calls about Kareem Brown. Let's take one quickly. A pastor on the east side. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Go ahead.
That's great. I think Kareem Brown has right to run for office, certainly. If Donald Trump can pose to be president again after being impeached twice, she certainly can run as an American citizen. Now, as far as the sheriff's race is concerned, the sheriff and that candidacy thing, you'll find that the top-notch people, as far as the grade above sergeant, up into the ranks of the police department, they don't live in Duval County. That's a very well-kept secret. So I guess the sheriff thought he could do the same thing and get away with it. And I think it's time for the black community to support Ken Jefferson for sheriff. I think his time is done.
Thank you for your thoughts. Check out our story on residency at jackstoday.org. Greg in Mandarin. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Melissa. This is Greg, and LJ Class 2011 is the best one.
yes, obviously. nice. Go ahead.
The Republicans are banking on the Democrats not coming out to the sheriff's election, but I think they'll be surprised because Lakeisha Burton is on the ballot, and it's a special type of person. So this, I think, will bring a lot of Democrats out to vote, and I think it won't be as easy as people may think it is. And, of course, I'm a big fan.
Thanks. Greg Burton. Thank you, Greg. Oh, I think that's Lakeisha's husband calling in, if I'm not mistaken. So obviously you're a fan, but I appreciate you sticking up for your wife. We want to hear from all political backgrounds on the sheriff's race. Okay, Jamie Jackson, what about that? You know, Duval County is essentially a blue county these days, at least at the presidential level. It went for Andrew Gillum very narrowly for governor last time. It went for Joe Biden. Will blue voters come out and turn the sheriff's office blue, I think, is the question that a lot of us watching this race have.
Absolutely. And I think by the turnout for the flotilla this past weekend for Governor DeSantis, I mean, not necessarily the best turnout for something that's supposed to be a major event, right? I think that that's something worth taking notice to. And I do believe this is going to come down to who's going to turn out to vote. And I think because there is so much attention already on the sheriff's office, particularly because of the whole Mike Williams scandal, I think that you're going to have more eyes on this, which means you will possibly have more people that are fighting and wanting to have some change. But, you know, we can talk about this, I think, after 12 today to make sure everybody who's in the race is going to be qualified to win.
Yeah.
And I'm sure after the whole Mike Williams thing, a lot of people are going to be certainly making sure their I's are dotted and their T's are crossed. But again, I think it seriously comes down to whether or not Republicans are going to actually show up. And I don't know. I don't know. I think Democrats have more at stake. And I think they've been more of a voice, at least publicly, when it comes to a lot of issues that a lot of folks in the area are facing.
Thanks for that. Let me make mention of the fact, too, according to our contributor, A.G. Gankarski, two Republican House primaries that appeared to be potentially open contests will be closed after write-in candidates filled the seats. This is a common tactic to close a primary in this state, and keep your eyes on that. You can learn more on our website about this. But more political shenanigans. We're used to seeing that here in Florida. If you're just tuning in, it's 549-2937 as we talk about the biggest stories of the week. Let's shift gears now and talk about another big headline. The Jacksonville City Council this week voted 13-6 against proposed legislation from member-at-large Matt Carlucci. It would have set aside $500,000 to remove Confederate monuments from public land, particularly the large monument in Springfield Park dedicated to women of the Southland. It was put up during the height of the Jim Crow era and is seen by historians as an offensive monument to white supremacy. Carlucci actually got a drone camera to show that the Confederate battle flag is clearly visible atop the monument. Now, this is the second time the council has voted against removing these monuments and said they say that the statues will remain in place while they continue to have community conversations about their impact in the community. Carlucci shared a statement with WJCT News this morning saying his bill was the first to be introduced so we could have a community conversation and a vote by July, which is what the strategic plan called for when we passed it in January. As we talk about this, we'll go to your calls in a moment, 549-2937. Jack Webb, you served on the city council. Carlucci was the only white member to vote to remove the monuments.
Yeah, Melissa, I saw that. And I saw that Sam Newby and Terrence Freeman also voted in opposition to the bill. I want to stay on the record. I think the city council is moving in the wrong direction with digital communication. You know, just move forward, do something, allocate the money. Let's go. Let's eliminate this. Let's eliminate this cancer from the body politic, from our community. Let's remove these monuments. Let's figure it out. Now, that said, though, politically, I got to ask Matt, what do you think? I mean, what do you think? I mean, are you going to get anywhere with this? I mean, I really don't understand what the purpose of this legislation was. I mean, I watched him, and I'm like, it was less than inspiring with regards to his presentation. And it fell on deaf ears. And, okay, you want to poke your colleagues in the eye, that's fine. But hold their feet to the fire. I mean, beat them up somehow. Listen, demand from the council president, where is your plan of action? What is the communication strategy going to be? What are the takeaways? What are the deliverables? I just don't know if this was a very effective use of legislative time. Again, he knew he wasn't going to get any votes. And so what are you trying to accomplish here, Matt? Making headlines, or you want to get something done? That's my critique. So,
if you were still serving as a city council president, how would you handle this?
I mean, that's a really good question. I would probably notice a meeting with Councilman Carlucci. Said, Matt, what are you trying to accomplish here? Whether you agree or disagree with the protocol, with the plan of action that's been put in place by the council, this is what the body has decided. If you're not happy with what we're doing with this particular, with the plan of action, tell me what I can do to help you fix it, okay? That didn't seem to occur here. All this gets us is additional bad press for Jacksonville. We look like a bunch of yahoos. Once again, we're supportive of Confederate monuments in public places. That's not what we need. What we need is resolution. Let's move it forward. Now, I get Matt's frustration. I get it. But, you know, tilting at windmills is fun, but it's not all that effective. So, and I'm sure I'm going to get a call from Matt in about 30 minutes, Melissa. But,
we'll find out. But in the meantime, let's take some other calls. Thank you for your thoughts there. Kate calling from the Rail Yard District. Hi, Kate. Good morning.
Hello. I was at the meeting on Tuesday night, and I am so embarrassed to say that I live in Jacksonville now. There's no excuse in this day and age for supporting these monuments to white supremacy. That is all that they are. And what most people don't realize is back in the day, women did not own property, and they were given humans as to own. That was their property. They came into marriages with more humans than their husbands did. Disgusting.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Kate. Shamari on the Northwest side. Shamari, what are your thoughts?
Good morning. My thoughts are there are very many groups and advocates for the removal, but there are the burden, the tax burden, the cost burden comes down to the taxpayers. And so some people agree, some people don't agree. I'm agnostic on it. But should we make the advocacy groups responsible for a portion, half, 75%, or the full cost of removal, or should we charge the people who put the monuments there if they are still viable entities?
Shamari, thanks for that. You know, Claire Goforth of the Daily Dot, Mayor Lenny Curry has gone on record saying he wants these monuments removed. He had set aside money in the budget. The Carlucci measure would have set aside $500,000 and the rest to come from private donations. So it's really, you know, this isn't a financial question. It's not as though it would be too expensive to get rid of this monument. That's not what this is about.
No, it's not. And I wonder, what is council afraid of, the ones who voted against removing the Confederate monument? I mean, other states, other cities have taken these monuments down, and we have done so as well with other monuments around the city. And what you primarily see in those situations is a very small but vocal contingent who wants the monuments to remain, and a much larger faction who wants them to come down. And that's what we see here in Jacksonville. There will certainly be some outcry among people who do want to see these monuments to white supremacy remain, but eventually, and I think very short order, they will move on to something else.
But not to cut you off, Claire.
Sure.
If, in fact, these council members believe that more constituents would vote them out over this issue than approve of them removing the monuments, that seems to be motivating their vote. Even if overall a minority of voters want to keep the monuments up, clearly these council members feel that that minority of voters would be more inclined to vote on this issue.
That is, they probably do feel that way, but I just don't see the logic behind that. This is a it is a symbolic issue, but there are such much bigger issues facing Jacksonville. We've got housing issues, we've got cost of living problems, we have septic tank issues continuing. We've got so many things that are going on in this city, and the monuments are just one of them. It certainly is important, and you know, I hope they like getting protested, because they're going to continue to get protested if they don't actually do something and take that monument down.
Peter on the south side. Go ahead, Peter.
Yes, hi. My comment echoes that. This is not about governing. It's about getting reelected. And the way to get reelected is not to give someone a reason to vote against you. These are politicians. They know that the vocal minority is going to make a point of getting out there to vote against them, while the people who are out on the streets waving placards probably won't even bother to vote. It's simple.
That's right.
Thank you, Peter. Well, Jack Webb, it turns out you were right. Matt Carlucci has called into the show. Councilmember Carlucci, good morning. Go ahead and turn your radio down, if you don't mind, and let us know your thoughts. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, if you could turn your radio down, that'd be great.
Okay, it's down.
Okay, so the vote didn't pass. What about that?
Well, at least people had to go on record of how they felt and how they wanted to vote. I think, by the way, my good friend Jack Webb, I respect what he says. But one thing, Jack, I don't need no more damn headlines. I'm just trying to do what's right for Jacksonville as a whole. And Jack and I are friends, so I just had to get that in there. I don't need headlines. But here's the thing. We passed a strategic plan in January to have a community conversation and make a decision by July. And time was passing by, and it looked like nothing was going to happen. So I introduced a bill, plus I put together a community conversation format before anybody did and submitted it. And it didn't really see the light of day. Council President Newby said, you know, apparently I didn't know that we had a strategic plan. I was the only one trying to keep within the timelines and the spirit of the plan. So how you make this inspiring, I don't know, because I think people are fatigued on the issue. But I thought we had a chance to pull two or three votes over and squeak out 10. And I was determined to try it. And I think to try to recontextualize it is going to prove to be as painful as trying to remove it. So anyway, you know what? They got the votes and the ball's in their court. But I do think it's an important issue. We can chew gum and walk at the same time. And Jacksonville's race relations, step by step, we need to make improvements, because that's the only way, we'll step into the 21st century and be the successful, vibrant city that we want to be. And it will eventually pull people together.
Thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate that. Matt Carlucci on the line. Jack Webb, you want to respond?
Yeah. Matt, thanks for the wrap on the nuts with regards to the headlines. But that said, I kind of suspected that might have been the point behind the legislation. But unfortunately, that's not what was communicated. And Matt's echoing what I was saying before. Like, what do you have to do legislatively to force the hand of the council? Is it a resolution? Is it an ordinance, a two-pronged ordinance that says in the absence of certain takeaway, of a protocol, of a plan of action to be instituted, to be effective as of this date, there will be $500,000 allocated to remove this particular monument? I don't know, something like that. But I applaud where he's going, what he sent to accomplish. Shame on the council for not following through on its commitment. They said we're going to do this. We're not doing it. Where is the plan of action? Nice segue here, but you know, you can sit around for months to talk about waste disposal, you know, about recycling, but you won't follow through on this commitment you made to the people of the city of Jacksonville. So thank you, Matt, for your leadership.
Thanks for that. Gary in Springfield. Hi, Gary.
Hi. I was just calling to just voice my concern as a resident of Springfield that, you know, this has become a citywide conversation, which is probably appropriate. But I think it's also good to consider the people who live in this neighborhood, and the majority of whom I would say would prefer the monument be relocated or removed entirely. And also, I just think the whole issue of the cost is a red herring. I mean, the city has spent more on fireworks in the last 2 years than they would in the bill that Matt proposed. So that's really what I wanted to comment on.
Thanks, Gary. Douglas in Jax. Hey, Douglas, what say you?
Hey, I'm all for removing it, and I think it should be removed. It definitely should be not displayed publicly. But I just don't want our tax dollars to pay for it. They're saying this gas tax that, you know, they keep adding money that they need to take from us with property taxes, the gas tax, all of that. Just find the money somewhere else. There's plenty of people willing to donate money to take this down. Just use their money and take it down. It should be gone already. Just don't use our money for it.
Thanks, Douglas. And lots of comments on our Facebook page. Here is just one from Martin. Carlucci is correct. Racism is our nation's original sin, and until we take meaningful steps to rise above it, we will forever be held hostage to it. Okay, lots of other news to get to. Can you believe it? Yes, there's more. We're going to shift gears now and take a minute to ask, what happened with this city's bicentennial celebration? Might have heard Jacksonville had a big bash to celebrate its 200th birthday. But virtually none of the city's former living mayors showed up, as was promised. Mayor Lenny Curry's office says he did show up briefly before going on to a Machine Gun Kelly concert. And so we want to make sure people understand that he was there because he came in for some criticism on that front. David Bauerlein, the city, you know, frankly, could have done a better job with this. All kudos, though, to the Jacksonville Historical Society. They did everything on their end to get the word out, talk about the historical significance. We had a number of segments here on our air about the bicentennial. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, a real missed opportunity. I think the local media read a lot of fascinating stories, TV coverage of the history of Jacksonville. Look, Jacksonville is a city that's in flux. You have people moving in all the time. There's a lot of churn. A lot of newcomers. This is a chance to kind of have a unified history for everybody in this regard. And it's a missed opportunity to really do more from the elected officials to reach out and make this a big, really big community event.
Actually, let me correct something I said a moment ago. Mayor Curry telling WJCT News, he informed the Historical Society that he would be out of town for a family event ahead of the bicentennial. So let me correct that. Jamie Jackson, you know, it's unfortunate that there couldn't have been a more robust response to this. There was a fun party on the river and fireworks and all of that, though. Wasn't all bad.
No, it wasn't all bad. And I actually went with my little daughter. We actually went super early right before it opened because I was expecting big, large crowds and a lot of activity, a big food truck line. And there wasn't any of that. And I do think that there is legitimate questions that are being asked about the mayor's involvement in terms of whether he stopped by or not. Just the fact that it took days even just for a confirmation of that says a lot. And I think when you're looking at what's supposed to be a big, huge moment, like you mentioned, the Historical Society did an amazing job and worked extremely hard to really make this event a huge deal and a historic moment. At the same time, it fell flat, honestly. I thought even for the concerts and all the various activities that there would be more people there, and that simply wasn't the case. And I think one of the newspapers, the headline was the bicentennial was a flop, and that's so sad to hear, considering what this moment should mean for the city. And I think when you look at unity, I think when you think about the monuments, I think about when you think about so much attention that's going on, here was an opportunity to celebrate the good things about Jacksonville. And although that did happen, thanks to the hard work that those who were organizing it and those who had the different booths and tents set up, they did a great job. But I still feel that we do need more answers from the mayor, and there should have been more involvement from the mayor, frankly.
Claire Goforth.
Yes, it is a very strange look for the mayor of a city not to show up to its own bicentennial. And, you know, we'll have to take Mayor Curry on his word that he had a family obligation. Family is certainly very important. You know, the bicentennial fell in a time when kids are just getting out of school. A lot of people are traveling. The weather isn't exactly amazing for it. So there are some logistical issues that are just not the fault of any of the many dedicated folks who worked very hard to highlight the really fascinating and amazing story history of Jacksonville. You know, the year is not over. There's certainly more opportunities to celebrate that. And so perhaps we can, moving forward, lump that in with the 4th of July celebration that's up and coming, or some other things to, you know, continue to say Jacksonville is a wonderful place to live and let's learn more about its history.
Jack Webb.
Yeah, Melissa, I want to echo that to a certain extent. You know, the mayor's job is a hard job. I get it. I mean, he's tired. He's been doing this for a while. He wants to spend time with his family. He's been kicked in the teeth a few times, sometimes deservedly so, sometimes not perhaps. But that said, he's tired. But, you know, you got to wear the hat. You're the CEO. You're the leader. Now, with regards to, you know, the turnout, and, you know, the absence of, you know, of real leadership, you know, from, you know, past mayors, whatnot. I think it's a metaphor. I mean, it's a metaphor for Jacksonville's current kind of mental malaise that, you know, we're kind of listless right now. We're dealing with issues we can't resolve. We don't know what to celebrate and what not to celebrate. We don't know if we're afraid to celebrate, because if we do celebrate, we'll have to address some of the bad things that are back there in our history and we can't even resolve now. So I think that all contributes to this kind of fall down and lack of enthusiasm and lack of civic spirit.
We're getting emails saying much the same. Here's an email from Jim. The celebration came the same week as Sheriff Williams skating off with full pay. Who wants to celebrate this city? Ouch. Well, folks, you know, if you don't like the leadership, we are having some elections coming up. And it's up to all of you, the voters, to decide what direction this city needs to go. Now, we're almost out of time. Let me make note quickly that after months of work, a city council committee studying Jacksonville's troubled garbage collection system has listed a number of issues to study further, and they may include higher fees for you and me. That happened this week. At the same time, the council hit the pause button on deciding whether they will open up more areas of downtown to new self-storage buildings. About 120 residents and business owners called on council to kill that bill. Speaking of development, the Jaguars say they're breaking ground on a planned Four Seasons hotel. The other day, though, on the show, Jaguars president Mark Lamping said they haven't officially signed a contract with that high-end hotelier, but he says it's imminent. We'll continue to follow that as well. Okay, with all of that said, I want to allow a little extra time for our panel to go around the horn and share stories that caught their eye this week. Yes, it's time for our Friday tradition, the lightning round. And it's hurricane season, so get used to more lightning. I'll start. Lots of Juneteenth events happening this weekend in the urban core, and also one at the beaches. The Rhoda L. Martin Cultural Heritage Center presents its Juneteenth celebration and Freedom Walk. That's tomorrow at 10:30 a.m. at 376 4th Street South in Jacksonville Beach. Make sure to listen to the Florida Roundup today at noon, and make sure to check out our medical show, What's Health Got to Do With It, Saturday at 4 on this radio station, and it's all in honor of men's health for Father's Day. David Bauerlein.
Yeah, it kind of came and went very quickly, but Reggie Gaffney, the council member, filed legislation, $4,000 to cover the cost of city employees to travel to get abortions. It was everyone's like, oh my gosh, abortion's coming up for debate in City Hall. Didn't happen. Everybody voted to withdraw it, including the bill sponsor, Reggie Gaffney.
Oh, including himself. Wow. Jamie Jackson.
Yeah, to follow up on Juneteenth, obviously a lot of people are asking, well, what do you do? How do you celebrate? Best way to do that, find a local black business to show your support to. And it's a very exciting time in our nation's history that we've even gotten to this point of being able to celebrate as a national holiday Juneteenth.
That's right. It is a federal holiday Monday, so lots of folks will have the day off. Claire Goforth.
And I'll just add the Melanin Market is a great opportunity tomorrow to patronize a black business. My news of the week that caught my eye is one on WJCT's website about UNF students excavating what they believe to be the lost indigenous village of Sarah Bay, which existed 450 years ago. They excavated that in Big Talbot State Park. So good job to the UNF students.
That is a great story. And Jack Webb.
I am going to find a Juneteenth event, and I'm going to bust out my bagpipes and my kilt and go pretend it's St. Patrick's Day as well. So we're going to double down.
Well, as a fellow Scot, I salute you on that front. Although
Irish.
Oh, you're Irish. Okay. Well, we're in the same Celtic family, so I'll take it. Thank you, Jack Webb. Thank you, David Bauerlein. Thank you, Claire Goforth. And thank you, Jamie Jackson, for being with us. And enjoy that three-day weekend as we celebrate Juneteenth. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks, everybody. Up next, keep listening, because we're going to take a spin through JME, our Jacksonville Music Experience. It's this month's DJ Listening Sessions. Inside the most unique musical experience anywhere around. Our own Matt Shaw is spinning it. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Biggest medical issues impacting men. I'm Dr. Joe Servin. Join me tomorrow at 4 for What's Health Got to Do with It? Only on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville.
News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, as we approach the holiday of Juneteenth, commemorating the end of slavery in Texas, we speak with historian Annette Gordon Reed about her book on Juneteenth. And we remember character actor Philip Baker Hall, known for his roles in Paul Thomas Anderson films and playing the gruff library cop on Seinfeld. Join us
today at 1 on WJCT News 89.9.
As the public hearings into January 6th continue, attention is also turning to what happened on January 5th.
This is not what tours look like. These are not places you take tours.
Plus, the Fed makes a big move, and a COVID vaccine for our youngest kids could be available by next week. All that and more on the Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Time to take a listen to the beautiful noise of Northeast Florida. It's our JME, the Jacksonville Music Experience, where we spin the best local, regional, and national artists with cutting-edge radio you will hear nowhere else. You can listen at our HD channel, and you can also stream it online at jacksmusic.org. Arts and Culture Editor Matt Shaw is here with more as we listen to some great local talent that you can hear on our stations. Hey, Matt.
Hi, Melissa.
All right. So who do you like this month?
I want to start with an artist, Kaylin Peavy, multi-talented artist, a singer, songwriter, violin player. She works under the moniker Cutie. That's spelled K-U-T-I-E. She's built a catalog of pop and R&B songs. She has a new EP on the way called Mindfulness, but this is a short joint that she released, and it's called Queen Affirmations, mostly a cappella number with some finger snaps and some violin. It's a really nice song. So let's listen to Queen Affirmations from Cutie.
It's better when you are a queen. When you're manifesting everything you need. When you know your worth in everything you bring. And you never lift a finger for a thing. Life was better when you were a queen. When you're manifesting everything you need. When you know your worth in everything you bring.
Beautiful.
Really nice.
Now, you have reviewed this song at jacksmusic.org, and it is in rotation on the independent 89.9 HD4.
That's right. Yeah, we're adding new music to our music discovery station almost every day now. There's so much great music out there, including artists making music in our backyard, too. So
yeah, and nowhere else on the radio dial can you listen to local artists. You just don't get that in corporate radio.
That's true.
So we're a unique spot on the dial
yeah.
for music, which is so exciting.
And we like to say that, you know, Jacksonville punches way above its weight as far as local music talent. And so I think a lot of these artists, if they lived in any other city, they would probably be on the radio. And so now they are. So we're happy about that.
Yeah, just go to 89.9 HD4 to listen to The Independent or listen at jacksmusic.org. And the beat goes on with more songs that Matt likes this month.
Yeah, so this is John Touchton. He goes by Severed and said it's spelled with a plus sign instead of an and or an ampersand. So he makes synth-heavy music using patches and keyboards and programmed drums. His new album is called Tragic Seeker. It's an instrumental album, and it's earned him some buzz in the instrumental synth community. Let's listen to a snippet of Unit of Hurt by Severed and Said.
Techno vibe
yeah.
that they've got going.
It's not, I like to have instrumental music in my like personal rotation, just like especially if I'm working and I don't want to be distracted by lyrics or anything. So that one would definitely get me cranking away on the laptop. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. Okay. Last but not least, Flip Turn from Fernandina Beach originally.
This is an exciting a band, especially their sort of meteoric rise. They've been making music for a few years now, but they've built a big national following in recent years. They're playing sold out shows all over the country currently, landing spots on main stages at just about every music festival. They played Shaky Knees, Lollapalooza. They're playing Bonnaroo this weekend.
Wow, they're getting big.
Yeah, and they headlined the Jack's Bicentennial concert if you were out there. But they're a really buzzed about indie band right now. So this song is called Halfway. It's from an upcoming full length. It's in rotation on the independent 89.9 HD4. Let's hear Halfway by Flip Turn.
You used to hold my soul. Oh, you held my soul. You used to have control. Oh, you love me so.
I love that. Now, before we run out of time, let's mention that Record Store Day is Saturday, and The Jacksonville Music Experience is giving away some vinyl records, concert tickets, and more with the Summer of Sharing.
Yeah, we've partnered with some of the world's coolest independent record labels as well as local retailers and venues. We're going to give away stuff almost every week this summer, so you got to follow at JME Jacks Music on Instagram and listen to us on the independent 89.9 HD4 to get details for each giveaway.
Get your vinyl and other fun stuff at JME Jacks Music on Instagram. Listen to The Independent at 89.9 HD4. Matt Shaw, always great to talk to you about music. Thanks so much for sharing it with us.
Yeah, thanks for listening with me.
And that's our show. Thanks so much for listening. Here's a little more music to head you into the three-day weekend. I'm Melissa Ross. Enjoy your long weekend. We'll be back on this program Tuesday at 9 a.m.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.